When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, hooligans and hoovians, and welcome to the Who A podcast on post-show recaps. I am your host, Kevin Mahadeo, thankfully no longer choking on poisoned air as I set fire to all the air in my apartment. And now I am safe, because that's how that works. And I'm going to check in on my co-host, Adam H. Adam, how are you doing? Have you set fire to the air in your apartment?
I tried to, and then the smoke alarm went off, and then Ruby got all excited. And it was just a whole thing. I couldn't deal with it. And then I got in trouble for burning the entire building down. Apparently, you're not supposed to do that. But I don't know. I guess in this Doctor Who universe, it's fine if the entire sky just gets waves of fire go crash across the entirety of the planet. I'm not a scientist, famously. We know this. We've talked about this so many times. But I know the word stratosphere, okay? That's a science word, right?
Like that's a word. That's a word.
Yeah, that's like something that would be used in science. What? And there's other spheres, I think. I just couldn't tell you what they are. My question, though, is like, what sphere of the universe could be capable of blowing up like this and we wouldn't all die? Is it the stratosphere? What are the other spheres? There's got to be other
ones. Here's the fun thing. I'm also not a scientist. Mm. And unfortunately, our resident scientist, Melissa, is not here. She is off in another galaxy fighting the Zargons, as far as I remember. Our doctor is out there fighting the good fight, doing her best to keep the galaxy safe. So it's you and I and a special guest this week. Everybody, welcome to the Doctor Who podcast. Taylor, what's up?
Hi. Who, me?
Yes, you. Yes. Couldn't be.
Then who?
Not a doctor.
That's right. Taylor, do you know the different spheres of the sky?
I can't say I do. I know the spheres of many fantasy realms, but not our own sky.
Oh, okay. I will say, I did just look this up. There are 5 spheres.
That's a lot of spheres.
Okay. Is it Mesosphere 1?
Mesosphere is 1, yes! Kevin! Oh my god! Okay, so from inward to out, okay, we have troposphere. Never in my life would have said that. Stratosphere. That one. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Amazing. Mesosphere, Kevin, pop off. Next, the thermosphere.
Yes. Nope. Okay.
I would never have guessed that. And then finally, the exosphere. There are 5 spheres.
Yeah. Okay.
I couldn't tell you what the actual difference is between them. I just have a nice little graphic here that is showing the
thermosphere is the one, right?
Like that's got to be the one.
You can set on fire.
Yeah.
Thermos there.
And I don't see poisosphere, so I don't really know where. I don't know where they were storing the poisonous gas here. But I like the guess of thermosphere for the fire. That seems to really make a lot of sense to me.
Sure.
Although I don't think that the thermosphere starts right at the tip of the Statue of Liberty as it is all blowing up. And so, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit lower when we're talking about the entire sky burning. By the way, that's not even that tall, okay? So like when we're burning the entire sky at that level of elevation, that is gonna hurt like the whole city.
We lost mountains.
The whole city of Denver is gone.
It's gone. Like,
are we already starting off talking about height issues of things? Is that what we're already gonna start off with that?
Yeah, that's our beginning here.
Love it.
Lose one of the hosts of the podcast who is very passionate about height issues. So I guess this makes a lot of sense, Taylor, for you coming on representing team at Shorties.
Representing the Shorties. A few inches shorter than Melissa, so I'm in deep on the team. So
at least we kept it, you know, balanced here with short, average, and giant. So I feel like we're in a good spot kept the measurements all good on this podcast. For those joining us, this is, as mentioned, the Who Way, the Doctor Who podcast, where we're covering Doctor Who week by week. We are in season 4 right now, and we are talking The Poison Sky, episode 5, which is the second part of the two-part Suntarum Strategy Poison Sky combo, in which we were encountering, I was about to say introduced, but I guess for new Who, introduced to the Suntarans for the first time. They have appeared in previous Who incarnations, but we are here talking about the revival, well, I don't even know what to call it, Christopher Eccleston series start in 2005, and we've been going through here as patrons before, and now fully on the main channel, talking about season 4, because it's just such a good season to like really get into Doctor Who and really talk about it. And honestly, still holding true to, in my opinion, like this is solid Doctor Who. This was really great, really great stuff. Taylor, I wanted to ask you, because you're here in the Discord, you're a patron, you've talked with us on the channel, left feedback before, but recap everyone else. Are you new to Who, or have you been in the Doctor Who world before?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked, Kevin, because I love saying this every time, and I say every time, like I've been on this podcast a million times, but it was only once, a very, very long time ago, in a time, in a galaxy far, far away. But I grew up as not a full-blooded Tumblr kid, but Supernatural and Sherlock.
I'm so sorry, Taylor. We just can't let that be said and not at least talk about it for just a brief moment. Okay. Can you please, for the uninitiated, probably Kevin, I would maybe include in the uninitiated. I don't want to assume that Kevin was not a Tumblr girly, but I don't know. Taylor, when you say this Tumblr life, can you just describe what that means for those who don't know?
I'm sure most people who listen to this are familiar with the word fandoms.
but care fandoms, what?
Probably too much to all the extents, but
right,
yes,
already too far. But just a significantly unhealthy amount of time spent on the internet looking at pictures, mostly like really terrible composite images of characters from multiple TV shows, book series, drawings, memes, songs, everything you could possibly think of. But I was very much in the Supernatural and Sherlock sections of that world. Now, some of you might be familiar with the term Super Whoolock. Now, I was two of those three, and now at the ripe age of 26, I am officially becoming the triple threat of the Super Whoolock. So
be careful with the age stuff too.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, the other thing about this podcast now though, what I don't like is that all of a sudden the average has just really shifted against me, and I don't love that.
Well, you might just have to deal with that. I don't know. That's because I do like that part of it. Taylor, I am only 2 out of 3 on the Super Whoolock, though I'm acutely familiar with the term and the community. I have never Supernatural. That is the one that I have not. It's certainly the most like fantasy of them. It definitely makes the most sense for me. That's kind of the element that I don't like jive with the most. But I don't know. Maybe if you're becoming a triple threat, I might have to hop on the Supernatural bandwagon.
Gosh, and Adam, thus, go ahead, Kevin.
The average has shifted again because guess who watched those, baby?
Yay! Now, Kevin, maybe you can join me in this, but I don't know if I can, with sound mind and sound heart, recommend the show Supernatural to you, Adam.
I can, but a specific point.
Oh, yeah.
My recommendation is you watch seasons 1
I can do that.
Through 5, and you tap out and that's you it. Leave.
How many more seasons are there beyond?
There are 15.
There are 15 total. Oh, 10 more after 5.
So 20 to 25 episodes per season that are almost an hour long each.
No.
Except for season 3, which was during the first writer's strike back in 2007, 2008, and is a truncated season. My recommendation, though, for Supernatural is definitely seasons 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. A very solid story, very tight. I mean, on a complete tangent here from Doctor Who, but the creator of the series, Eric Kripke, basically created Supernatural, launched it, and at a certain point in either season two or three was just like, I have a 5-season arc. Like, that's the story I want to tell. There's 5 seasons. And they were like, cool. And he's like, okay, great. I'm glad we're all aligned that I want to tell 5 seasons of the show. They're like, yeah, totally. And it came along, and season 5 happened. He got to tell his story. He finished the story probably where he wanted. You can tell where they have to tweak it. And they're like, hey, we want to keep going. And he said, basically, good luck with that. I said 5 seasons. I'm leaving. And then he left. And like, it's kind of incredible to just be like, no, I did my thing. I'm going to go now.
Yeah.
But yeah, big Eric Kripke fan. He's also behind The Boys on Amazon Prime, which Mike Bloom and I covered the last season. Probably will continue that train running. That A train running, I guess. Yeah, it's, I do love those first 5 seasons. I think they're really solid, really well done. And for Tumblr people, boy, oh boy, I don't want to now be like, now Taylor, explain Slash, but like, because we're not going to go there. We're going to keep this podcast as close to PG as we can.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know what? I'm not even going to talk anymore. I'm going to stop right there.
I did a quick Google search. 327 episodes of Supernatural total. That is a not okay number.
It's just a lot, gonna
put that out there.
Just all that Jared Padalecki and Jensen Ackles goodness.
Mm-hmm. Oh my, wow, really just erasing Misha Collins like that? Unbelievable.
Listen, Misha is above everything. Misha's like a god, okay? Misha's
an angel. Thank you.
I guess. Oh my gosh.
All these things confusing to
I have no idea what's going on, but I do want to bring this into a little bit of Doctor Who trivia.
Yeah,
so maybe,
yeah.
Maybe get us back on track.
Bring it back.
Total number of episodes of Doctor Who released. Do you want to put a guess in for how many episodes of Doctor Who this includes? All of the old stuff.
If this is less than 300, and what did you say, 27?
327 for Supernatural.
This is less than 327. It's on 60 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Remember how long these seasons are, right? I mean,
true.
So you want to put in a guess? Maybe whoever gets closer gets the win here.
469.
Wow. I like that I really got both of your answers there simultaneously, and you both elongated your words just so you could keep talking over each other simultaneously for all three of the digits. Okay, 469 Taylor's guess, 270 for Kevin. Both of you are way low. It is 862 episodes total of Doctor Who.
Incredible.
Wow. We're gonna die here.
Wait, well, so I was closest. What do I win?
I don't know.
Oh, damn it.
Maybe we can stop talking about Tumblr. Is that the win? Is that enough of a win for you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or I got an idea. Because she won, I'm going to send a message back in time to ourselves to invite Taylor onto the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
That's how she got invited to this podcast. I was wondering how she got invited, actually.
Yeah.
So this
is too.
It really actually explains a lot. Tracks.
Yeah. Wow.
Now that is timey-wimey right there, baby.
Timey-wimey, baby.
There we go.
All right, so Taylor, you were 2 out of 3, but now you're here into the Doctor Who world. You've been following along with us as we've been watching. What's your feeling? So what was your feeling when we first started, and where's your feeling now in season 4? Because I know that season 4, I feel like, is a real spin around for a lot of people who have been questioning us on this journey so far.
So I think, honestly, because of the background of the Super Hulock days, I was very eager to start this journey. And I kind of have been along for the ride, but certainly I feel like from the beginning to now, my love for it has exponentially grown and continues to grow. I'm having such a fun time with it. And it feels like those shows from like my childhood, from like high school, that like no matter how many times they repeat the same plot line, you love every part of it. Just no matter how many times things happen, no matter how many times characters fake die and reappear, it's all amazing and it's all so much fun. So I'm loving the ride personally.
Do you have any thoughts on the two doctors that we have seen thus far? And maybe if you've seen other doctors, and you know, you can tell us kind of your history in terms of like what you've seen, where you started and stuff like that. But I'm curious about the two doctors that we've seen and your comparison of them.
So I really enjoyed, I'm forgetting his name immediately.
Christopher Eccleston.
Thank you. Chris, I loved him. I know.
I was gonna say, well, that tells us what we need to know.
I did love Christopher Eccleston. But I feel like David Tennant was certainly the doctor that I saw around the internet the most when I was at least in that era. So it's fun to actually see him in action. And he's kind of exactly how I imagined him to be, which is lovely and wonderful. So that's been really fun to kind of see these characters that I've seen. I've certainly seen Rose Tyler so often. So it is really cool to finally sort of see these characters that I've only seen in memes and composite images finally come to life.
Getting the real context behind the memes.
Well, that is interesting that you mentioned Rose here, Taylor, because I do have some feedback that you sent in that you may have forgotten about here. Let me just read this. I love Rose Tyler so much. Kevin is completely wrong. Please put more romance in the show, please, and thank you. I love it all. Do you remember?
That seems
I got this from Oh, no. Okay, sorry. That was my own personal feedback that I said.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be like an alternate timeline, Taylor.
That's Rose Taylor. That's what that Rose is. Taylor.
yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, like thoughts on companions. We joke about Rose a little bit, but, Rose, we had Martha, who's kind of like back now. Thoughts on that. And then, of course, the amazing Donna Noble.
So Rose was tough. For me, I definitely had a lot of feedback about Rose. I think I could use less romance and hand-holding and running in general.
What is it? Why? Why? It every is so, time.
It is so, like, not efficient. If you're running somewhere, holding hands with somebody makes it so much harder.
I feel like efficiency is not the top priority here.
When you're running?
I don't know.
You're trying to get somewhere.
You're trying to get away from something usually, Adam.
But like, what if you were those? That is what I always tell people. I'm like, if you see me running, you should probably also start running because something's coming. But
stop Adam and grab his hand so that he has to run along.
I wouldn't mind the company. I don't know, Taylor. Don't make me do what I'm going to do with Melissa next time we're in the same place, Taylor. We're going to be together in a matter of months. And I swear to God, don't even tempt me. We'll start running around holding hands. I'll do it. I've noticed
a whole line of people holding hands and running, and it's going to be the most dangerous thing.
So I have like a story with this, right? I think about it every time I see people holding hands and running. So
how often do you see that just first besides this show?
I mean, lately, often, yeah.
Lately a lot, okay.
So in high school, you have like I had it in my head. It's like the day where everybody goes outside and you have all the different stations and you like do all sorts of
like
different
activities. Like the presidential fitness test thing? Like
No. Not like the official fitness test. Like you just go out and it's like the free day where like each class goes out at a certain... You guys didn't do this?
Yeah, I don't know what this is.
I mean, this sounds really great. I'm down. I kind of wish that we did.
Is that because I had like 50 kids in my class?
Probably.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway. So... Yeah,
so when you guys got to hang out outside.
So we go outside and we split the class in half. So it's like 25 to 30 kids per team, right? And you have to go through these different sort of games and things, and whichever class like gets done first wins. But the caveat is that you have to run holding hands with the 25 people in your class. Everybody has to be linking hands and running at the next challenge, and it is so difficult. It is so hard. I can't imagine, like, with one person maybe it's fine, maybe like for funsies you could go ahead and do that, but I just, when you're trying to get somewhere, that is not helpful.
Okay, so I just want to clarify my position here a little bit.
Yeah.
When you are a sophomore in high school playing field day outside, there going from station day to station, that's not exactly the situation I'm talking about. We're talking about running and holding hands. If you're a group of 25, maybe that's more just about like, let's all stay together and not get separated and have high schoolers running around everywhere. Right. I am specifically saying, if you are a hypothetical doctor and companion trying to get from point A to point B, I don't know. I think running with holding hands makes a lot of sense. But if we're talking two dozen, 17-year-olds, like, maybe that's not it.
Right. I'm just saying that that's what that reminds me of. Mm-hmm. And all that says to me is, like, inefficiency, which anybody who knows me knows that's just unacceptable.
Did you win field day? Like, did your class do well?
Maybe.
You don't know.
Okay. Probably. I was very competitive, so yes. Okay. Was well, competitive.
That's what people are here for. Our discussions on field day, for sure.
I never got to do field day, Kevin. I always thought that
you
was
lost
like
a doctor and you gained me.
Yeah. All right. Well, after a short break, we're going to get into the episode, The Poison Sky, part two of Sunharm Stratagem Duo. So let's take a quick break and then get into the breakdown. All right, and we are back. Okay, with Melissa gone, I'm taking over duties this week, so this is really exciting and fun. Let's see how I do. All right, so this episode picks up from where we left off. The doctor is desperately trying to free Will from the prison poison in the car before he chokes to death, basically. And Donna's there yelling, like, get him out. What's great about this, the doctor's using a sonic screwdriver. Donna's like, help. And then Donna's mom just pulls out an axe and smashes the windshield because she gets shit done. Yes. Incredible moment, honestly. In that, like, it was such a cliffhanger of, like, what are they gonna do? How are they gonna get him free? Like, even to me, I was like, I didn't remember how this resolved itself, and, like, what a way to resolve itself.
It was so great. I wrote in my notes in all caps, like, let's go, mom! Because number one, you need a handheld weapon in your house, right? You never know what's going to happen. You need to have, like, a machete, an axe, like, a sword, even.
A sword?
Yes.
It's a real upstate energy right there.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Kevin, do you have a sword in your house?
I do.
What?
Hell yeah. Let's go.
What? What do you mean you have a sword in your house?
So, unsurprisingly, as a youth, Kevin was a sword kid. So, Kevin does in fact own swords.
Oh. Yes. Wait, swords with an S?
Yes, multiple swords.
Yes.
How many swords?
I'm going to admit they're not, sadly, in my New York apartment right now because of space issues. Mm. They are at my parents' house. I see them every time I go because my dad has them out. But I currently have four.
You?
Four. No, well, again, at my
four
parents'
total?
House.
Four total? Okay.
Four total.
Yeah. I love the car. Hey, Dad. Can you wash my swords?
Yeah, can you keep these? I might need them one day.
Too relatable.
Wow.
Too
the
relatable.
Closest that I could ever get was in college. We had a baseball bat right by the front door, but that's like as close as we got. I don't have anything now. Who's coming into my house right now?
No. Well, not poison gas, I guess.
No, not poison gas.
Oh my gosh.
All right. So Wilf is freed, which is fantastic. The soldier whose name is Ross, from the previous episode, who was hanging out with the doctor, shows up in a taxi cab, the doctor and Donna head back to the Atmos factory. And, like, Wilf, like, gives the support as the mom's just like, where's she going? And he's just like, you go. He's a very supportive grandfather. So despite the mom's protest, they're off. Meanwhile, clone Martha is doing some hacking, and she accesses the NATO mainframe, I guess, which you can, sure. I that's totally fine. So then she connects with the Suntarans, who say a wonderful, wonderful line. Good work for a female. Now she must be protected. Taylor, yeah. Must you often be protected after doing a good job on something?
I'm so mad when this freaking line. I cannot with these guys. They drive me absolutely insane. Good work for a female. Once again, come on over here, pal, and say it to my face, and we'll have a good time. Come on over. Come on, bring it.
He's gonna get sorted multiple times.
Buzz Lightyear looking freaking crazy person.
That's a real insult to Buzz Lightyear.
Wow.
You cannot tell me that these guys don't have a literal, like, they have the Buzz Lightyear silhouette and, like, the evil Emperor Zurg eyes on their helmet.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Like, they literally, like, put the two together, and then when they take the helmet off, they're like hot dogs.
we might be eating different hot dogs, but
yeah.
I mean, I felt the same way when people were calling them potatoes. Like I don't know that it really tracks for me. The Buzz Lightyear is an interesting comparison though, because I do feel like if you were to smack Buzz Lightyear right in the neck, he would really struggle. Like
yeah.
that would, I think that is that's a great comparison right there.
That might be where his reset button is. I forget
it could
where
be.
It's located.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Maybe this whole thing is based on Buzz Lightyear. We have to check some years here.
This is the real Lightyear. All right, so back on the ship, Radagon is super excited for war, which, as we saw in Human Nature and Family of Blood, something you should totally be excited for, especially as a youth. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Donna arrive at the factory, and the Doctor, like, gives her a TARDIS key, which is, like, a big deal, and, like, he's doing it because there's all the gas, so he's like, you'll be safe in there. But, like, Donna essentially is just like, hey, look, this is great, no time for sentimentality. We'll have to do this later when the sky is not so filled with poisonous gas, which is understandable. The Doctor tells the Colonel not to engage the Centaurans in battle, and when he questions him, like, hey, what are you gonna do, the Doctor says he's gonna use the TARDIS to get onto the ship. So naturally the clone soldiers teleport the TARDIS onto the Centauran ship without the Doctor, but unfortunately with Donna, who is inside hiding out from that poison gas. The Doctor and Martha's clone arrive to find the TARDIS gone, and he says that he's trapped on Earth like a human person. How rubbish is that? No offense. Adam, did you take offense to this?
I honestly didn't, because I am also trapped on Earth. Like, I'm not, you know, I can't go anywhere. Like, that's an accurate read of the human race for the vast, vast majority of us. The one thing I was like, you know, maybe like, all right, come on, Doc, come on. Like, what are we doing here? Is that basically every episode that the Doctor comes to Earth, we see the TARDIS at the beginning, and then we see it again at the end. Like, it's never like, oh, I'm going to take the TARDIS a couple of blocks east and then, like, drop it off there to get to my next location. Like, that has never once happened. And so, basically, every time he comes to Earth, he is, like, more or less stranded here. This was maybe a little overly dramatic here. The other thing, we've also already done this before, right? With Donna being in the TARDIS and the Doctor, like, not really being, you know, like, we've already done it. And I think that the last time was better than this time for that particular story point. So that was maybe like one of the only downs, because I think like I didn't even say my overall thoughts in this episode. I really liked it, actually. I really like, I'm pretty high on this episode, but I think like this is, and it feels weird to like start with the one down story point that we're really talking about here. But like, this was maybe one of the only things that I was like, okay, like we've did this. Maybe we move on a little bit from this or twist it a little bit. And we just kind of didn't, but. Everything else I really liked, I swear.
Yeah, I really liked this episode. I also never said, I was too fixated on hating on Rose. But I love Martha and I love Donna.
Yeah.
I loved getting Martha back for this little arc. And I think I mentioned it in my feedback for the last episode. I love Donna's sass. But yeah, I mean, the hair and like outfit, like just need like a little bit of work here.
What would you do to it, Taylor? Like, what is the fix here?
So she has like, right now she, in this episode, she has like her straight, right? Like her straight hair with the bangs, which like cute, fine. I would like zhuzh it up a little bit. She looks so cute with the curls, but she has these like very wide leg pants.
Is where it is. I agree.
The wide leg pants and like the really long shirt and like the big blazer. And I just think that we need to like tighten it up somewhere, or maybe add like a little bit of color in there. I just feel like Donna's so sassy and she needs to like live that life in her clothes. But if she likes it, she likes it. But
yeah, it does. I mean, it feels like a little bit more corporate-y. And it was also like, you know, this was what, 2008, 2007, somewhere in that range. And so I think, you know, maybe it makes a little bit more sense to that point than it does maybe to today. But I do agree. I think the hair could maybe, I don't know, we need to do something
just
with it.
Just a little
Especially since she had like better hair in the
the curling looks so good
and stuff. Yeah.
But I also have to ask, these like things that get the TARDIS onto the Centauran ship, that seems incredibly like, what kind of technology is this?
Those little plot devices that are
plot device teleporters that would probably solve a lot of problems that they have to deal with in this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have transport technology. We see it elsewhere. Sure. We saw it last episode where they're holding the ball thing or whatever. I don't know. Maybe we'll get to that part of it as well when we're somehow it's broken and then it fixes and then we get back up and go. Like, it's, you know, it's all over the place. Basically, if we need something to happen, we can make it happen. And that is the true motto of Doctor Who.
That really is a Doctor Who motto. All right. So the Doctor is, though, suspicious of Martha. I think rightfully so. He questions her about her family, and she responds like, oh, I mean, I was going to get to that. And he tells her that Donna went home to hide the fact that she was on the TARDIS. When he gets back inside, he establishes visual contact with the Suntarans. Someone also salutes him in this moment, and he's totally not huffy at all about it. Donna's in the TARDIS, and she is observing like the screen, but someone, was that a person on the screen briefly before the static kicked in and she could see the Doctor? Yes, indeed. It was Rose. For a brief moment, we had Rose on the screen saying something that we couldn't hear, which was a really nice little like tease, I think, that we'll talk about later, I'm sure. So the Doctor's trying to figure out what the Suntarans' plans are. Apparently, there's a war going on between the Suntarans and someone called the Rutans for the last 50,000 years, and the Doctor assumes that the war must not be going well. The Suntarans are doing all this stuff. They start chanting again, and the Doctor literally changes the channel on them to cartoons, which is like A-plus moment on his part. And then he goes back once he figures they're done, and I even asks them, you done now? And the leader, Stahl, brags about having the TARDIS. And this part, I'm really curious what your thoughts are, because the Doctor says that it's noble, and then he says something in Latin that's basically just Donna Noble, and Donna's like, that's me. Yeah, Donna, you got it.
Like, good job, Donna.
Yeah, it's such a moment. It's a weird bit of writing. Right. And like he eventually tells her like, oh, it's a phone box. So like she should call him. Donna doesn't know what his number is. But that moment of just like saying that Latin and Donna being like, that's me. It was straight up, in my opinion, like that moment in Lord of the Rings of Legolas, like a diversion. And it's just like, yeah, Legolas, we got it. We got it, man.
Good job, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, good job, there. Buddy. Like, what did you guys think about this? Is it just me in this moment or?
No, it was hilarious. I like loved this whole this whole conversation with the Doctor and the Suntarans and Stahl was like just hilarious. And yeah, this was great. Like I love that we needed the number one, the Doctor like going into not a lot of detail, but saying enough, and then getting Donna being like, yes. It's like, all right, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, really funny. I want to bring up a couple points here. The first one is I just love when we can just have a random video call and have the camera shift for like on the screen, just at whatever angle we need it to, as though there are cameras everywhere that can be adjusted for this impromptu video call. I just love that. It's really funny because there were so many times when he was like zooming in and I was like, nope, there's not a camera there. Like, that's not a view.
You don't know where the cameras on the TARDIS are.
It makes no sense. He also just opened the video link with his sonic screwdriver. Like, okay, whatever. This thing is really funny. Number two, I got into a weird rabbit hole of the animated show that was put up. Oh, wow. Because this was a real show that was created in 2007 called Tommy Zoom.
Oh my god.
It's like a part animated, part live action show that would like be a live action. I got way too into this. Amazing. It's just one season. It's the nichest of whatever. And then I did really love when he was like something noble. Donna was like, what? Donna Noble Pacem. She's like, oh, that's me. This is a really tough look for Donna because every single other time we have seen any companion kind of get hinted at, they've been like really good and perceptive and smart. This is a bad look for Donna that it took like that level of, hey, you, Donna! I mean, basically shouting at her like, this is to you. And then she still like didn't know what to do. She like still couldn't figure it out. After all of that, come on, Donna, you're better than this. We've seen
well,
right? Is Donna actually Rose, pretty dumb? Is that bad?
Rose is like, you know, the compassionate companion, quote unquote. Martha is the smart one.
That's
because
such
she's
a
got
nice
the,
word.
Yeah, the doctoral. Hey. And Donna is the sassy. We love her. She's great.
Is she the Dumbo? Last episode, she was calling she was calling the doctor the Dumbo like one episode ago, and now she's the Dumbo.
Pretty dumb there, you know, I'm not saying she's a dummy, but you know, she's not.
Are you saying that? Like,
I mean, Donna is clearly not there for like the high stakes, like life endangering adventure. She's there to like experience space and like have a good time. Like, she was so, it took so much for her to actually step outside the TARDIS and like punch one of these guys in their little, you know,
neck hole,
neck button or whatever. So, like, you know, I don't think Donna's necessarily dumb. I think she just like doesn't want to apply herself because she's just having a good time or trying to.
Okay, that is a really generous read. I think when she's like standing in the TARDIS completely safe, being like, what do I do? I don't get it. I don't understand. What number do I call you at?
That's relatable. If I didn't have my contacts in my phone, I'm screwed.
How many phone numbers do you know? Like, how many could you rattle off right now?
Two?
Just you and your wife, probably? That's the...
Including my own? There's more than that. I could do...
Three.
My wife and my sister are the two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think three, I have like
including my own.
I think I have like four or five.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Remember back in the day when we knew so many more.
Well,
so
one of them is my old house phone number.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's a thing yet. 2499503. That's the. I don't know. You could call. I don't think anyone would answer. I don't think that's a landline that currently still gets used, but. Hopefully I didn't just dox anybody. If that is a real, maybe
my old one,
I'm not going to tell you that. Well, I didn't tell Mineria code, so maybe it's fine.
True.
Your Mineria code nowadays, but yeah. Anyway.
All right. So while all this is going on the TARDIS and with the Doctor, we have Radigan, who's telling his students that he plans to take them to another planet called Castor 26, I believe it is, and begin the human race anew. And he's calling it Earth 0.2. He briefly considered calling it Radigan's World. Naturally, everyone there is like, this guy's cray. They want to leave and find their families. And Radigan pulls out a gun because of course he does. And he also admits that he designed a breeding program because, again, of course he did. This guy is really... like
literally a psychopath.
No. He's a crazy person. He's the worst. He's terrible. He's an evil villain. Okay, I'm not even here for his redemption story. But the acting is really good. This is incredible. Like, this is, to me, this is on par with my dearest father, brother, you know, remember the brother of mine, sister of mine.
Flaming of blood.
I think like that is roughly on par with how good this is. And it's really, really incredible. I'm also going to make a comparison here that I just don't know who this is going to land with. I'm hoping it lands with you, Taylor.
Okay.
Are you getting Neville Paperman from iCarly vibes at all? The guy who is like, you will rue the day, Carly, you will rue it. Are you getting that guy? Because that is exactly the vibes that I have been getting from this guy.
iCarly, man, I'm too old for this podcast right now.
Oh my gosh.
It's like a one-to-one and it's uncanny. I had to pull that episode and I watched it earlier today.
That's incredible.
Okay, iCarly is a really good show and I actually would recommend it to people.
Great.
I really do like it, but it's big Neville Paperman vibes.
Clearly outside of my scope. I watched a lot of stuff off the Disney Channel and such. I'm an avowed Kim Possible fan, seen the entire series. Love the movies, big fan. It was outside of my wheelhouse at that time on that one.
No, that's a great comparison. This kid is, I love that this like kid genius is like, I'm naming my new planet Earth 0.2.
He's a genius, but he's not creative, right? I think that's the lesson there. Which so the two painful. Aren't always hand in hand. Like, he has this gun, but it's completely ineffective because, I mean, I guess this is something towards the character, I guess. Like, he's not going to use it, so they, like, peace out afterwards, and, like, he has a totally normal one over it, right? Like, they leave, and he totally just acts and responds rationally. I'm kidding, he yells like a little baby, So Donna calls her mom and Wolf because she has this phone. And there's a bit about this, like, pollution and environmentalism that her mom says, right? Like, they kept warning us about this. And, like, this was fine. Like, I was fine with it. It was very obvious in what they were trying to do. But, like, it was short. At least they didn't, like, linger too long on just, like, let's just pontificate about the pollution and environmentalism and what we've done to this point. Like, I'm happy that it wasn't that, at least. Mm-hmm. We're saving that conversation for later, Adam, in a while from now, probably. Yeah,
but it's coming. The conversation is coming. Just
oh, yes. Okay, so UNIT decides to use nuclear weapons against the Santarans. However, if you remember that NATO hack, Martha is able to stop the launch completely. The Santarans enter UNIT, and while the doctor says to get the people out of there, the colonel, of course, says open fire. Works out about as well as you can think. So Ross, the soldier that was there from earlier, dies amongst this group as the Santarans just basically slaughter them. They take full control of the factory, but the doctor is wondering why, which is a good question because, like, this seems completely out of character for, like, everything going on. So he's a little bit confused on, like, what exactly what the stratagem is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, the one point of confusion I had for this was, like, okay, we got in the system to, like, make the nukes not work, right? Like, that was the reason why fake Martha had to get into the system. But also the doctor says, like, the nukes are not going to do anything to the Santarans. But then also the Santarans are, like, big on if, like, we want to be attacked, we want to fight, we want to go to war. So, like, either the doctor is wrong that the nukes wouldn't do anything, which I don't think is correct, or the nukes do something. I was a little lost on this part. I didn't really care, or it didn't really matter, but I'm just, like, logically, I have to represent Melissa's feelings here, I think.
I don't know, like, okay, so there's a whole thing about, obviously, in the stratosphere or in the atmosphere,
which specific,
right?
One, Kevin? Yeah. Let me just
yeah, that's a good question. But if, like, if a nuclear weapon goes off, it's bad because it actually dissipates it further and the effects are, like, way worse. So I don't know what the situation would be like in space, but if, like, a nuke goes off in space, it could affect the planet, which is absolutely what the Santarans don't want, because they do need to use the planet. So it could be that's the reason they don't want the nukes to go off, because it could affect the planet in some way and that would be bad for them. So that's my assumption.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was, like, just so frustrating too, because I love it when people, like, bring the doctor on for advice and are like, we'll listen to him completely. And then he's like, don't do this explicitly. And they're like, oh, okay, we're gonna do it anyway.
That's the one thing we're definitely gonna do.
Yeah, we're absolutely doing that. Yeah. Freaking humans, man.
Yeah, freaking humans is usually a good statement to make. The doctor says that he wishes the Brigadier was here, but the colonel says that Sir Alistair is stranded in Peru. Now, whatever could that mean? I think we can probably say here. Oh my God, what is the full name? Brigadier General Alistair something.
Lethbridge Stewart, right?
Lethbridge Stewart is a former companion of the doctor, which is really fun. So he was a companion way back in, oh my gosh, which doctor is this? Is the fourth incarnation? He's definitely like an early incarnation of the earlier incarnation of the doctor. He was one of the companions. I think he was around there for a while too. So it's really fun to, like, have this reference. And also just sort of acknowledges a different era of Doctor Who and shows the variety of companions he has, because, like, he is a soldier. So I thought that's a really interesting thing. While this isn't a continuity moment, I will say, remember the name. This is something that comes about in really cool ways, I think, throughout the series. So it's a really, really fun beat. So Radigan dejectedly returns to the Santaran ship to tell them about his failures. And the Santarans, to the surprise of everyone, are like, hey, there is no other planet. We made that up. The moment those people showed up, we were just going to shoot them for target practice. So, like, they only needed him to install the Atmos system. And when they say Atmos system, he corrects their tautology usage. So and they understandably try to murder him over it in anger, which I thought was very funny. But they don't. He teleports back before they can kill him. I honestly loved that beat so much.
Yeah, I cannot even imagine being in a situation where my life is on the line in that capacity and they're about to kill me and I'm correcting grammar.
I absolutely would do that.
Yeah,
I am 150% would do that. You like mess something up and it's like my thing. Like I'm going to correct you and I'll die for it happily.
I would die on that hill.
Happily. Oh, if I go down correcting grammar, I mean, I guess that's how I go out.
Wow.
There is, okay, so like this has come up a few times for people who have listened to me on the podcast, on various podcasts, but just the idea of like, I will burn it to the ground just to prove I'm right on something. I did a Sex and the City watch for the first time relatively recently, and we were watching this, and like there's a character on there who Carrie Bradshaw dates. It's played by Ron Livingston, who's a fantastic comedic actor, just really great all around. But he plays this character who's really kind of like obnoxious in a very specific real world way. And there was a point where she was criticizing something in his book where he talked about a girl in a scrunchie in New York City. And she was supposed to be a native New Yorker. And Carrie's just like, well, would never wear a scrunchie. Like, that's just not a native New York Manhattanite girl thing. And he was just like mad at her about it. And like, so this whole thing happened, and then they went to a bar later, and there was a girl there wearing a scrunchie, and he, like, they had gotten over the fight. They had gotten over the fight, and, like, he, like, nudged her and, like, pointed to the scrunchie, and, like, she tried to, like, hold it back and, like, didn't really acknowledge, didn't really say anything, and, like, then he's just like, never would wear a scrunchie, huh? Kid, never would happen. Like, really digging at her, and then she, like, you know, smarmily was just like, she's not from here. She's a tourist. And, like, they confronted it, and, like, she was a tourist. It was a whole thing. And Robin, my wife, was just like, if that was me and he did that, I would have burnt it all to the ground to prove to it. Because, like, Carrie was nice compared to, like, what Robin would do. And it's the same situation where he, like, is like, I will correct your grammar on my own system that I built for you that you lied to me about. Like, it just is a specific type of energy. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Tangent,
we took a journey there.
I mean, it's relatable, though. It's very relatable.
It is. Especially for, like, specific types of dudes, right? And, like, this dude is one of them. Like, if this dude said something incorrect, you'd want to just correct him because, like,
oh my gosh,
he's terrible. So, meanwhile, the doctor finally phones Donna. He instructs her over the phone to reopen the teleporters from the warship. She's scared to go out there because there's a guard out there. The doctor says his line, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, but you've got to try. I knew that he says it often. So now, though, ever since we've mentioned it, I've just been picking it up every time. But he manages to talk her into it. She goes out there and whacks his vent with a hammer, passes out, and the doctor guides her through the ship. There's one point where there's a door that needs three fingers, and she's like, what do I do? And he's like, you have three fingers, like you could do that. And she's like, oh, yes, indeed. And
she used all five though, Kevin. I like this is the thing that like didn't make she did the what is this the Spock thing? Is that what this is, right? That's the Star Trek.
Yes, that thing that everybody can see us doing.
Live long and prosper.
There you go.
She didn't even use three fingers. Like she didn't even use I'm not a big Star Trek guy, although I've heard that Picard is actually very good, but I'm not a Star Trek guy. But she does, she does that thing. Also, I was told that not everyone can do this. The Spock hands.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like a thing that people can
do. That wasn't a thing when you were a kid. You were like, can you do this?
Yeah, it was always that and like the rolling of the tongue. That was the other thing.
Yeah, I can't do that one.
You can't like roll your tongue, Kevin?
No.
Oh.
No.
Wow. No, Taylor and I just both rolled our tongues.
Look at that.
We had a real moment of solidarity.
It's shifted again.
Yeah.
The power keeps shifting in this podcast.
Really like
two out of three, baby. Man, we cannot get 3 out of 3 on anything today.
No. All right. So the doctor hangs up once the colonel comes back. He's ready to fight because that's worked so well before. So they gather outside the factory. They all have gas masks on. And the doctor asks the colonel, are you my mommy?
Which, so good.
Great reference. Loved it so much.
10 out of 10. Great callback. I was happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because like the colonel is just like, what do you think of these guns? And the doctor's just, are you my mommy? Which is just...
The moment is so serious. There's poisons, the poison gas all over the world. People are dying. Oh my God. Just incredible.
at this point, the shield helicarrier, I mean the Valiant, shows up, and its engines are strong enough to clear the fog around the factory. The Doctor actually admits that's pretty brilliant. The Valiant opens fire, blowing up a wall, allowing UNIT to enter, and they're able to actually fight back with their new bullets and actually take down some Suntarans. The Suntarans, though, love it. One of them says, the honor of battle, the glory. Like, they're just like, yes, 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 this is what we live for and die for, I guess, which is very fun.
Yeah, my one question, why did we not think of this earlier to deal with the poison sky? Big fan. Why didn't we think of this?
Wow.
I don't think we had the speed in which to build a giant fan for the planet.
I don't know. I just big fan. I think it would have worked. Big
I also can I ask though, the Valiant. Am I missing something? Is it super significant that I just don't know?
So this is not the first time we have seen the ship. This was back from the Christmas invasion when they were dealing with the Sycorax, if you remember that. This is that same kind of deal. It's all Torchwood stuff. There's probably more in the Torchwood show as well about this ship. I just don't know about that specifically, but this was back from the Christmas invasion.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
There was also a line in here. I think I forget who said it. It was like, oh man, there's London. You can't even see it. And then you pan out and you can see the entirety of London.
the special effects artist didn't catch that line.
Yeah. Man, you can't see anything. You'd expect them to pan out to like nothing, just fog. And it's the clearest London skyline you can ever see.
Hilarious.
All right, so with the Martha clone in tow, the Doctor makes his way to the cloning room. He finds the real Martha there. He is not surprised by this at all. He knew the clone was a fake for a few reasons, but also because she smells harsh. He severs his connection with Martha, which causes it to basically start dying, have a heart attack. Meanwhile, the Colonel confronts the Suntaran commander, and he tells him to face him, which he does, and then he shoots him. Suntaran finds it wonderful as he dies. These are wild aliens, to say the least. But I do like that element where he was just like turned to face me, because it's like that face your foe in battle bit, which I think is really interesting and a really interesting parallel to like a bits of the military and these creatures. So I thought that was really interesting. It's subtle, but it was I thought pretty well done.
That whole piece of them, and the Doctor says it to them in the beginning on the video like chat with them, but like this alien race who is all about front facing like combat and facing your enemy, and like their strategy is the like poison gas, the like sending in the clone, like this is so cowardly. I would be like laughing at these guys, because like are you serious? Like, this is ridiculous. But yeah, man, I gotta say, the whole Donna clone dying, that must be quite an experience to like watch yourself die. Like, oof,
rough. You should maybe incorporate that in some D&D missions.
Oh my God. Why would you say that, Kevin?
That's an interesting thought. No. That seems like some trauma that can happen.
Yeah, I'm into this idea.
Very interesting. Yeah, right now, Brenna and I are currently wrecking Taylor and a whole party against an astral dreadnought.
I haven't even looked.
Right now. No, that'd be very interesting. They also really played out that moment. Like, it wasn't just kind of a brief thing. They let Martha talk to Martha for a long time in that room. Like, that was not a quick scene. Maybe too long, in my opinion.
I don't know. Like, I kind of like the idea of it, because we saw this Martha clone doing all this stuff for the Suntarans, but then Martha realizes, like, they share the same memory, right? And I think having the conversation, talking about stuff where she's like, the Doctor is the enemy, and she's like, yes, but, like, you have my memories. You remember our family, you know? I think that's a really great way to have her talk to this other version of herself, tap into that. And so, like, the betrayal of her, you know, helping them and revealing that the poison gas is actually clone feed, I think, like, tracks in that way. So I kind of like that it was a little bit lingered versus really quick.
Yeah, I also liked it. I thought, and maybe it's because my brain is geared to think of things like, what would my character do if this was a D&D session and this was happening? And it was very relatable.
Which character? Because one of them might shoot them with a bow and arrow.
That's very true. But yeah, I kind of like this moment between Martha and her clone, this like convincing of sort of, you know, regardless of who the enemies are, like we're here together, like we share memories, whatever. But I love when Martha takes back her engagement ring. She slides that ring on. Girl, that is not staying on that finger. That engagement ring was so loose.
So loose, yeah.
That would not survive the shake test.
No.
Are you kidding me? What, like, we're in a, like, a war right now, Martha. Like, we need to have a fitting engagement ring.
I feel like we don't, I really don't want to get us too far off track again.
Fair enough.
I just have no idea what the shake test is. But I'm also not the part of
this.
Okay, I could guess what the shake test. I mean,
yeah, it's not.
Okay.
You know, I've never heard of this as a common test used to for rings. Although I'm, well, you know, certainly not at a point in my life where, you know, I'm putting on rings all the time.
Well, listen, Adam, if the time comes, the shake test is especially important for engagement rings because mm-hmm. they are expensive and you don't want that to fall off and be gone forever. That would be bad. So
yeah. I guess I just have a lot of faith in the person that I would ever hypothetically give that ring to like figure it out, you know?
Nope, that's no.
Here you go. That's, figure it out.
I mean, like, if we, you know, if we need to, like, whatever, fix it or
know
or
their like ring size before even getting to that.
How
point.
Can I again? I this is said from the perspective of someone who is just not at the point in their life where I am having these conversations with other people. However, if you were like hypothetically had to go about like, hey, roughly how big is your finger? Like, how does that question? Like, how does that? How do you ask that question?
What a way to
well play. The. Yeah, depending on
how else do you put it? What also?
What's your ring size?
What's your ring size? Is
well, they're gonna know then. They're gonna know. Well, that there's a ring.
Do you think how big is your finger?
Why? Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, how can we?
Ready?
How can we? Yeah, please.
Hey, I'm going to the thrift store. I'm going to the flea market. What's your ring size? If I see something like what kind of earrings do you like? Like, mix it into the conversation.
Oh, like try and slip it in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, wait till they're asleep. And then tie a string around their finger, and then you know the size.
Okay.
I
didn't do that, but I did see people saying that, and I was like, I'm not doing that.
Kevin, I tried it.
First of all, she's a light sleeper. Oh. So I did not do it that way. I actually just, so I know what size, like, I know I've seen my sister physically, I've seen her sister physically, and I've seen my wife physically. So I was just like, finger, probably in between both of them.
As opposed to not physically?
Yeah, well, you know, and I was able to, sometimes you don't like sometimes people don't meet other people before, sometimes marriages happen quickly. Very, I don't know.
Marriages happen quickly. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, I was able to just go in between their ring sizes. Adam is leaping over this.
Adam's actually dying.
I know you're never going to listen to this back, but you really should. I've seen my wife physically, my sister physically, my sister-in-law physically, and finger were the words that came out of your mouth. And I am dead.
Oh my god! I also just have to say broadly that like I don't know my ring sizes. So,
oh my god! Like,
there's a whole so many layers.
What
to
are
this
the sizes?
Problem.
Is it like small, medium, large types?
No,
their numbers like one
numbers
to like one to like nine. I mean, they were both married, my sister and sister-in-law, so they knew their ring sizes because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
They both said before that they did not know their ring.
How big do you know what your ring size is, Kevin?
No.
Okay.
Once that information is no longer necessary, I just generated.
Hey, it's just
wow! What a brag! What a brag! Oh my goodness!
No longer necessary.
Oh my gosh!
Anyway, so clone feed. They're converting planet into a giant breeding world because the Centaurans are all clones. So Martha and her clones share this moment before the clone dies. And as Taylor mentioned, takes engagement ring back. With Donna's help, the doctor is able to reactivate the teleport pods and rescues her from the Centauran ship. Her immediate words upon coming back is, "Have I told you how much I hate you?" And gives him a hug. Fantastic moment.
Amazing.
Donna, the doctor, and Martha teleport to Radigan's, who still has his gun. And I just love that the doctor just like takes it and tosses it without even stopping his walking. It's fantastic. Absolutely incredible moment. So the doctor builds an atmospheric converter, which ignites the Earth's atmosphere, and it clears out the gas. And since I'm not Melissa, I'm just going to accept this and not ask many questions. Yeah,
I love that for this podcast. I think that we should all just be like, yep, this is the thing that happens, and we're good. Agreed?
Okay.
Oh, no! We couldn't get a 3 out of 3 on this.
No, we can. It just hurts.
Would this have been better or worse than Giant Fan?
Like, what if, stupid.
Seriously, I could actually see this as a Doctor Who situation here. What if he's like, I can do this, but I have to spin the moon around like a fan, and then it'll blow everything away. Like, which would have been better?
And just whip it around.
Yeah, exactly. No. Well, the TARDIS's gravitational pull would be able to.
I have, like, I did take environmental science, and we did talk a great deal.
You're a scientist.
Yes, I am.
One thing, that one course.
Just the one. That's all you need. But the don't mess with the moon. Just don't mess with the moon. Number one, do not mess with the moon. I don't know if like it would be this simple because, okay. How would I get more upset about the sentence, we will breed across the earth for the glory of Sontar? Because that's disgusting. And I was upset.
I mean, yeah, but they're, to be fair, they're just breeding via clones. So it's not
that's gross, though. The idea of breathing in, like, food that's going to turn me into, an alien is so gross. I'm not here for that.
Would the drinking a thing that'll turn you into an alien, like the ood, also?
No. No. I think I'm just like, don't like trick me or like
force into ingesting me to anything. That like turns ingest me into an alien.
Ew.
When did you see the movie Alien?
A long time ago and far too many times.
This probably explains your fear of eating anything and then aliens happening because pretty famously graphic moment.
Yes, it lives rent-free in my head, but Sigourney Weaver is an icon, so love her.
Yeah,
just going to put another 2 out of 3 out there. I've never seen Aliens. So.
Interesting. Me? Adam.
It's, first of all, Alien and Aliens, phenomenal movies. Highly recommend. Aliens is one of Josh Wigler's favorite movies of all time. I love that film. But the first one, Adam, is important a little bit because the person that we're talking about, have you seen the scene?
I don't know. Maybe.
There's a chest bursty scene that happens in Alien.
No.
I try to
avoid situations where people's chests are bursting open.
That's hilarious.
What if I told you that person who it happens to will become very important later in this podcast?
Oh.
And by very important, I mean extremely important.
Well, now, I mean, do I have to look this up? Should I watch this
Don't
scene?
Do it now because we don't want to spoil it for people, but we'll talk about it. We'll chat. We'll chat a little bit. All right, let's get back to this, though. The atmosphere is cleared. We see scenes of celebrations from UNIT, Donna's mom and Wilf. The Sontarans take the loss and leave. I'm just kidding. Of course they don't. They decide they're just going to ravage Earth and kill everyone. The doctor says a goodbye to Donna and Martha, and he tells Radigan to do something clever with your life. It's clear that he's about to sacrifice himself, and he's going to ignite the air in a Sontaran ship in order to eliminate the threat. But Martha asks him why he can't just send up the device by itself and put a delay on it. And he says he can't because he has to give them a choice. This is a phenomenal line and a phenomenal doctor moment. This line, like, I think makes this episode. It's so, so good. And it's such a defining moment for like a character to just basically be like, no, he has to give them a choice. It says so much about who he is. This is amazing. This is just so fantastic.
Yeah, I loved this. I very famously, kind of, well, not very famously, but I play a lot of characters in D&D. I love characters in general from stories and in movies and things. This, like, this kind of ideal, this sort of empathy, this that everybody should have the ability to make the choice is so good. And I really love this moment, even though the doctor and the drama, but the line was incredible. I agree.
Yeah. And I, like you're saying, Kevin, I really like this as a character beat for mm-hmm. the doctor that we have seen thus far and that we will continue to see. And I think that, like, you know, a couple of times throughout this podcast and throughout the episodes we've talked to, it's like, he always gives that second chance and the third chance and the fourth chance. And like all he, like, he's never going to be, you know, not willing to offer some kind of redemption. And I think that it's like the last chance that really sticks to me of like, the doctor is just always willing to give them another try, always willing to do that up until the literal last moment that he possibly can. Like, there does not exist a boundary to the grace that he is willing to offer to anyone in any situation, because like, just objectively, if we, you know, listed off all of the ridiculously evil and terrible things that the Centaurians did throughout these two episodes, it's a long list that is filled with some of the most awful things that any villain of this show has done thus far. Like, you know, I would put them on par with anything a Dalek has done the whole series thus far. And I don't even really think it's close, right? And
wow.
Like, he, I mean, seriously, like, what we're talking about, literally trying to murder and create alien food of every single person on Earth, right? And, you know, like, so many things. And gosh, he just still does it. Like, it's still that moment. And there isn't like a bunch of surprise or anything about that. I wasn't surprised when it happened. Mm-hmm. But I still think it like plays really powerfully as he goes up there, because he's accepting that he has to give them this chance. He knows he has to give them this chance, even at his own expense. And I think like that is the real crux of this, because it's not a last chance of convenience to make the doctor look good for offering the chance. It's not a, okay, I have to do this because of my moral code, but I'm still going to be fine after I do this. It's a, I'm going to put myself in harm's way, potentially die for this, because it is so fundamental to me that there is no one beyond the point of redemption. And that is like really the core message of who the doctor is, of Doctor Who. And I, it's one of the reasons why this show and this character resonates with me and so many people, because that is just a fundamental core tenet of the character. And it plays out every single time.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's very well said. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just such a great, like, character beat, right? Like, in the same way, like, the character I played on Dragonfly recently, but in their first incarnation, was very much similar about, like, giving people chances and things like that. It's just such a, like, Donna Noble type, like, thing. I tried to do a Noble type thing and put Donna. It didn't work. Anyway, but given the choice, the Centaurians choose death, naturally. They're ready to deploy their weapons on Earth. The Doctor is begging them to reconsider. But they start chanting again, because of course they do. And Radigan, meanwhile, back at on Earth, decides to do something clever. And he teleports himself onto the Centauran ship, switching places with the Doctor, and he gives them the Centaur Ha chant one time, and then hits the button and blows them all up. So he had his moment here. And Adam, this is something you said earlier. You're not here for the redemption. And I definitely wanted to like talk about this, because I find this interesting. First, I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, I, just like given what the character has done and how the character has acted, as much as I really do love the acting, right? I just don't think that Radigan was in a position where I was like ready to not only forgive, but also like be interested in him being the one that gets the shining moment to save the day, right? Like that to me is not the story of these two episodes. And I have a little bit of umbrage with like that being the choice that they made for how to get the
podcast. Done.
Well, yeah, hopefully. For like, you know, that being the choice they made, like, you know, the Doctor gets out, he's the one that ultimately has that sacrifice play. I don't know. Like, we saw him just be so terrible earlier. I think what, to be honest with you, I think like what this needed was one more scene between the Doctor and Radigan to like really set in the idea of the reasoning why Radigan is making this choice and the reasoning, like, you know, that he has for going up there, and like his, you know, clever creativity and coming up with a solution is because of what the Doctor said or did. we got like a little bit of it right. Like he had a really nice moment with Martha, with Donna, and then he was just like, make something clever of your life, kid. Basically, you know, one of those. And like that is the impetus for how it saves the day. It's not Donna, it's not Martha, it's really not even the doctor here, because he wasn't really given the opportunity. And instead we get Radigan doing it. I think I just needed one more scene of basically what we were saying before, of that same kind of forgiveness, of that last chance, give you this opportunity, some kind of, I don't know, pep talk, some kind of get right, kid, like get straight, you know, something like that for him to like have this moment. I feel like it was slightly unearned in the sense of like my overall feeling of how the actual story ends and how it gets resolved. I'm still, you know, crediting the doctor with the ultimate save here as opposed to Radigan. And so maybe that's part of why this gets redeemed in my eyes a little bit. But if we, you know, if we're giving Radigan the credit here, I struggle with that a little bit.
It's so
I don't necessarily disagree with anything you're saying. I just wanted to kind of talk about this out loud, because it's always, to me, redemption stories have been like a, not a thorn necessarily in my side, but like a sticking point in me in a lot of fiction that has come out recently. And it really hit a limit on a certain current end of a trilogy that wasn't a trilogy, but is actually the ninth movie in a series, is what I will say. And their attempt at being like redeemed now, and don't we all love this character? And it's just like, no, absolutely not. And this is my issue with redemption stories, is that they you do a thing. Here's the one thing you did after doing all this terrible stuff that means this person is a good guy now. No, it does not. And it's interesting in this, because when I was thinking about this moment specifically, it's hard for me to point it necessarily and say like, this was them trying to be like, you are fully redeemed now. And I think like, maybe that's why I'm a little more accepting of it, is that I don't think it was meant to be like, he is redeemed and be revered, but he did an act that wasn't like selfish, that he did a thing. And like, it, even in his moment, he still showed like, hey, I can do this. But doesn't mean we're going to be like, great, we'll remember him as a hero forever. And like, it's hard to say like, that's the way it does work out here, because like, they don't really go one way or the other. But I agree with you. I would have really liked it if his reasoning wasn't just like, the doctor said, do something clever. If he was just like, you know, like make fool out of me, right? Like if he was more about like, he's doing it because of his own, like still like mental thing to be like, they made a fool out of me. They ruined my school. They ruined everything. I'm going to show them how clever I really am. And then he does it. I think that still speaks towards his reasons and motivations. He's still that person, but he does an act that makes him still like, well, you're still bad, but you still did a good thing in that moment, and that still works. But I don't think it's like redemption, because I do agree with you. Like, it's not enough. Like, too many redemption stories are very much just like, he did one good thing, huzzah! And like, that's just bad writing and bad storytelling. There's been like, off my head, like, there's two redemption stories, I think, in fiction that are like my epitome of like, this is how you do character redemption. One of them is Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Phenomenal character arc, going from straight up villain to, by the end of the entire story, he's a completely different character, a hero. And it took seasons of story to get him to that point. And the other one, I think, is the number one of all time, and I doubt it's going to be beat, which is Zuko from Avatar: The Last Airbender. Yeah. Impossible to beat that. Like, it's just so well done and so perfectly executed of like what a redemption story is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I don't disagree with you guys. I think though that there is something that I can see in Radigan where all this made sense to me. Because over these past two episodes, the doctor and Radigan don't necessarily have a conversation about this. But whenever the doctor interacts with him, you know, he's very witty. He continuously like tears Radigan down. And I think that instead of this kid kind of being mad at the doctor, I feel like it turns into a sort of respect and sort of an understanding of like who this person kind of is. And we get to this moment and, you know, this genius kid has spent a lot of his life in this, you know, doing this, being the genius kid and finally doing what he wants to do for himself, or at least feels that way. He wants to rule something. He wants to own something, which like probably speaks to like a crappy childhood that he probably had, and where nobody said no to him. And the doctor comes in and is like smacking him around with his words. And they, yeah, we get to the end of the story and the kid is like, I can't like let the doctor do this. And I certainly don't think that like this one thing redeems him, because he's clearly like a psychopath and really like not a good person. But I thought that this was really kind of cool of a moment for him here. Is like very kind of a valiant end for this kind of this character that we, most of us, I imagine, hated. Just a, like you said, I'm very well acted. But I thought it was understandable, at least for me, when I tried to like think deeply about the character. And, you know, he's so young and, you know, I mean, he was trying to do something heroic in his final moments, which, you know, I guess I can see it. I can understand his motivation there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a good point. But even like what you're saying, the comparison to the doctor, right? Of like the, you know, the doctor kind of comes in and puts him down multiple times throughout their conversations and stuff like that. To me, that just makes me want that scene with him and the doctor even more, right? Mm-hmm. Like I so want the doctor to come in and just like start relating to this kid, because in a way, a very different way, and you'd have to kind of squint to see this, but in a way the doctor and this kid are very similar in like really a lot of aspects, especially the intellect, the loneliness, the how they interact with other people. Like there is a lot of this, you know, and the doctor is not always very, you know, kind, humble, or understanding when dealing with other people, especially in you know, when we're talking about ways of intellect. And so I think like, gosh, a conversation just like, you know, around the academy, kind of after things maybe calmed down a little bit before this ending, of the doctor and Rannigan just being like, hey, I know, you know, I know where you're coming from. Like, or he tells a story about someone from the past. You know, there's a lot of ways to do it where they can kind of have this relating moment. But I think if we had something like that, and then of what you're talking about, Taylor, of like this kid is like, I can't let the doctor go out like that because of, you know, because of this. I think it was just like the motivation, the reasoning behind it that I felt was a little flimsy compared to some of the other stuff this episode and some of the other stuff I know this series has to offer. So, yeah. But I do think that's like a really good, you know, understanding analysis of like this is how they were interacting before. I just wanted like just one more scene.
A little bit more.
Just sure. A little bit more.
And this is all fair. This is, again, why I really wanted to talk about this, because it's such a, like, interesting talking point. And I feel like voicing also our own POVs on this moment, because it's so easy to write off to be like, he's completely redeemed now. Hooray him. And I feel like voicing like, no, yeah, is good. And like, if you wanted to really, really lean for that redemption, here's how you could do it, to Adam's point, you know, like having these moments. So I just wanted to talk about it out loud, because I just feel like redemption stories get so glossed over these days that somebody needs to say something or do something. But anyway, so Centaurians all blow up. We cut back. Everyone's gone back to, slowly going back to normal life. They're taking the Atmos out of their cars. Donna's ready to go off with the doctor. Her mom obviously won't like this, but Wilf again gives her blessing to keep traveling to the doctor and go see the stars, and ask her to bring some of the stars back for old Gramps, which is just such a touching, wonderful moment. For like this man who really wished that he was young enough to travel like this, you know, but clearly is too old. And so like, it's just so sweet. Like, he's such a great character. Everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah, it's really great.
He really reminds me of like Toodles from Hook. That's like kind of the...
Well, I got it. I know what you meant.
Yeah. Like,
are we 3 out of 3 on Hook?
We did it!
It only took us an hour and 15.
Yes, incredible. But yeah, I mean, Granddad Wilf, I mean, which I love Wilf, is short for like Wilfred. Like, I never in my life have I heard this, but I love it.
I have to, maybe I don't have to ask the question, but I'm going to assume it anyway. We're an hour 15 and no one's listening to this. Is Wilf a gilf? That's the question. No.
Oh my god. No.
You ruined it. You ruined it for Taylor.
Okay. I was
Taylor.
Just about to say that like I totally cried at this I am like, I don't know. I podcasted before I podcast about Willow. I can't do the like supportive family relationships. Like, they absolutely destroy me. So this with like, you know, him sending like her blessing to like, oh my gosh, it was so good. But yeah.
Wait a minute, you podcasted about Willow?
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't think I've heard that before.
Oh, don't. We'll get there. Don't worry about it.
All right. So let's hit to the end as we're close right now. So they get back to the TARDIS. Donna asks Martha if she wants to come with them, but Martha says that she's, you know, she's good. She's had her time. There's so much here, including her fiance. And so she starts to leave, but then the TARDIS door shuts on her and it starts flying off. So who knows where? And that is where this episode ends, in a semi-cliffhanger, as Martha's going to be along for at least one more ride, which is very fun.
Very fun for us, but poor Martha.
Yeah, probably not for Martha. Yeah, so that wraps up The Poison Sky, the end of this two-part episode, which was really fun to cover, really fun to talk about. And now we get to the other stuff. Actually, before we do that, the continuity threads. We mentioned a couple things here, right? The Brigadier General is going to be something that'll come back around. The Sontarans themselves will come back around. Unit is going to come back around. There's a lot that's in there. I'm trying to think of any other major things from this episode, but I think those are the main points that will be things that you should remember and pay attention to, because they will play a part in Doctor Who as we move forward. But yeah, let's hit on down to, we read a lot of the feedback last week. A lot of people threw in their feedback for both episodes, so we kind of covered our feedback. Because a lot of people who have been listening previously, we usually do them as one, but we'll be splitting them up moving forward so we can get feedback for each episode in two-parters. That's sort of how we're going to be covering it from now on. So that'll head us right into our ratings. We actually requested that while in the field of battle against the Zarkons, that Melissa send her ratings in for this episode, which she did. So Adam, if you would like to read Melissa's ratings and some comments that she had.
Yeah, so as always, we start with Wibbly Wobbly, where she gives a 4, pretty high on this overall. She says, I was kind of middling on these episodes, but getting to see Martha again, Donna and her family, and the doctors, I've got to give them a choice, made it some great Doctor Who. So 4 for Melissa. Absolutely. For Wibbly Wobbly. And for Tommy Wimey, just a bit lower at a 3.5, still very solid. She says, Sontaran are fun baddies, plus getting to tie into some Doctor Who lore with Martha in Unit is great. So pretty high overall in the episodes is Melissa.
Yeah, agreed. Adam, would you like to share your Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey?
Yes. Okay. I think I am in agreement with Melissa on Wibbly Wobbly. I really liked these this two-parter. I remember being, it's already been so long, but I remember being very high on the first part when we talked about it last week, mm-hmm. and I'm still high on this now. I'm also at a 4 on Wibbly Wobbly. Unfortunately, I'm going to be a little bit lower on Tommy Wimey than Melissa is, because we know. I just did not see the Tommy Wimey that was, you know, here really. I don't know. There was just not a lot of it, unfortunately. So I'm at a 2 on Tommy Wimey. I don't necessarily think that things need to be Tommy Wimey in order for them to get a high Wibbly Wobbly score. I think that my overall enjoyment of the episode is not necessarily always predicated around Tommy Wimey, but in this case, not a lot going on that is relevant to time.
Yeah, I definitely get what you mean, right? You can really like the plot and structure an episode, and it just doesn't have a ton of whatever we define tiny Wimey is, yes. amongst our own personal selves. Nate Taylor, you, I believe, submitted your scores in Discord, and I believe, Adam, you've probably already incorporated those in, I assume?
Sure, yeah, just tell me again, just in case maybe I did.
Just in case that we missed it.
Because we still want to say them out loud, right? I mean, I don't want to bury them hypothetically in the spreadsheet that I definitely put them in.
Absolutely. For Wibbly Wobbly, I have not as quite as high as a 4. I really enjoyed it, but I feel in comparison to some of the other episodes I've seen, it wasn't as high. I still had a good time with it, so I put it at a 3.8 because we're breaking rules.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Oh boy.
And then for Tommy Wimey, I'm on the same page with you, Adam. I'm at a 2 because I didn't feel the Tommy Wimey-ness, whatever that is. I didn't feel it necessarily super present in this episode. But
you know what, Taylor? I really love the Tommy Wimey-ness for you. It's just a vibe. It's not
just a vibe.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And for everyone who's listening, you could, of course, can send your own scores in for episode. We got two scores that we do. Wibbly Wobbly, which is the story of the episode, the plot, the, you know, how did you like that overall? And Timey Wimey, which is the other part, like in the title, Timey Wimey, the time travel, but we some of us classify it as the sci-fi elements, the like, what are the interesting pieces there? So send those in. You could do so if you're a patron on the Discord, or you can send them at kevin@postshowrecaps.com. As for my scores, I'm really torn. I'm sort of not, got a little lower just because I'm not going to do a 3.8. Because like that's wild for me, but I do 3.75. I do that the 0.25.
You're telling me that the 0.05 difference here is okay. Okay.
Mm, it's just my own personal you know, OCD-ness refuses to allow me to
You're not even the one putting these in the spreadsheet. What do you mean your own personal
I'm saying them out loud. So I'm gonna go with 3.75. I do think this episode is really solid, really good. But there's other episodes in my mind that hit that 4 and above that like I just liked a little bit more. But what I will go is higher because the parts that I really do love are the Suntarans themselves, and I throw that into as a race and as like the idea of how they develop and all that stuff into my own personal Timey Wimey. So I'm going to put that into Timey Wimey at a 2.5 for me, so a little bit higher. Okay. So those are my scores for this episode. Adam, where does that leave us?
Well, the audience is a little bit lower on basically all fronts for these set of episodes. So as a reminder, we did both of them together. And I just want to say, because there were some people that submitted the ratings after last week. And so if you wanted to hypothetically submit them for this episode, or if it was just for last episode, and you want to like average them out, just, you know, these are still changeable. I just want to say we had people send them after part one of part two, and we're only doing one rating for both episodes. Just making that important caveat here before I say these numbers. But for Wibbly Wobbly, they were at a 2.95. So just under a 3 there. Lower than all of us by a pretty significant margin. And then for Timey Wimey at a 2.25. So higher than me a little bit, but lower than both of you. So we're at a 3.7 for Wibbly Wobbly, 2.5 for Timey Wimey. Not very high for Timey Wimey, 3.7. We take those. It's the second highest of the season overall after Partners in Crime thus far. So, still pretty decent there.
Yeah, definitely not a terrible rating. But for sure, if you only sent in ratings for the first part, please send them in for the second part. We were doing any two-parters coming up, we're going to write them as a whole because it's the only way to really think about it, in our opinion. As one complete story, even though we're doing them in two different segments, yada yada yada. But being second highest is not so bad at all. I mean, again, this is a really solid season, and I think we've got some really solid episodes coming up, and starting with next week's episode, which is going to be season 4, episode 6, The Doctor's Daughter, which what could that mean? This will be a real fun one to talk about. Taylor, thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful adventure through space and time. It was great having you and talking about this episode with you.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. This was wonderful to come back to the who-ness so far down the line. Who-ness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who-ness? The new phone?
Who-ness.
New phone who-ness?
Who-ness?
All right, on that note, we will see you all next week. Until then, Allah.